Hi, it's Grace, and this is a special series of Frogmore Stew called Meal Prep. The politicians that run our state government are essentially the ingredients that make up the stew that is our state. And by getting to know each of the folks running for state house and state senate, we hope to offer you a window into what we as the voters will determine the final recipe to be. Caitlin, TJ, and I took on the task of interviewing as many of the people running for those seats as we could. The interviews offer us a more personal look at the variety of people who want us to send them to Columbia. We learned a lot. We hope you do too.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Today we're with Angela Jeter. Angela, welcome to Frogmore Stew.
Thanks for having me.
Tell us a little bit about where District 11 is and some of the bigger cities are that are in it.
District 11 is in Spartanburg. It is a district that covers the downtown part of Spartanburg. Then it moves up through the area, going to Inman, Bowling Springs. It's got quite a few small towns. You'll have Lower Africa, the Lake Bowen area, Chesney, Southern Shops, and a little bit of North Packlet.
Is there one issue that you think stands out above all, or do you feel like they vary based on the different parts of the district?
I think they vary, but the thing that runs throughout all of those areas is education and economic development. Because if you don't have industry, you don't have jobs.
Yeah.
If you don't have people that can fill those jobs, you still don't have jobs. So even if you have industry, but you don't have a workforce that is capable of being in those jobs, you're still at a disadvantage.
Do you feel like it's a little bit of the chicken and the egg, that there's industry there, but not enough people, or are there enough people, but not enough industry?
I think it's probably more of there's a lot of people there, but not enough industry. You have, being in Spartanburg, of course, everybody automatically goes to BMW, which has been incredible for our economy. And because of BMW, a lot of small businesses that actually feed into BMW exist. We're pretty rural up here.
Yeah.
And you still have areas that still need investment. They don't have a BMW that will feed the tax base and generate the revenue that's needed to take care of the schools and other capital improvements in their area.
This goes back to chicken and the egg, which is if you don't have good schools and you don't have hospitals and you don't have grocery stores, then businesses don't want to go there. But those things can't be built unless you have the business to support the people that live in the in the area.
Exactly. And that's why we have got to make sure that our rural investment is to the point where those communities, some of them have great natural resources. They have lakes, they have rivers, they have parks. Whatever their resources may be, we've got to work with them to make sure that they have what they need in order to be able to sell those resources to industry. Because once industry comes, then all of the other things that come along with having an industry there, hotels,
restaurants, hospitals, and so forth.
Do you think statewide there's one issue that stands out more than any other?
Well,
maybe infrastructure.
If you've driven across South Carolina, like I've had the opportunity to do when I ran for the U.S. Senate, one of the things that was very pressing was lack of roads. I think that's a big thing. South Carolina is struggling with the infrastructure. I think it's also struggling with education. Our rankings are very low in the educational spectrum nationally. Just like everybody else, we have a teacher shortage. We're trying to figure out what exactly is going to be the trigger that helps teachers make the decision to either come to South Carolina or, because we have so many colleges here, stay in South Carolina. So I think educational and infrastructure are probably the drivers there. We're doing great economically. We have been a lightning rod for a lot of businesses, Volvo, Mercedes, BMWs, and Boeing, and so on. From an economic perspective, statewide, I think we're doing well, but we still got to get at those educational pieces, and we've definitely got to address infrastructure and not just use ballot initiatives like Spartanburg did with the penny sales tax.
And so many of those companies that are great companies to have in the state, they're manufacturing jobs. And when they're asked about top tier level jobs, they often say there just aren't candidates in the state to take those gray and white collar jobs. Do you feel like it's equally as important to attract more gray and white collar jobs versus the manufacturing?
Absolutely, because I'm one of those job applicants. As an accountant and tax consultant, it makes a difference. I didn't learn manufacturing. Cost accounting is a different version of accounting. So I'm not going to be geared toward manufacturers. I'm going to need those white collar jobs that are coming. And it has been a challenge for me to find jobs that would help me facilitate my career development to the point where I created my own small business and became a consultant because the opportunities are lacking.
If you had a magic wand and you got to the state Senate on day one and you could change one policy immediately, what would it be?
I think it would be the policy concerning how our teachers interact in the classroom. I think we've gotten so focused on testing that we've gotten away from teaching. And I think I would pass legislation immediately to unhandicap the teachers so that they could do what they need to do to teach the children the way they learn the best.
And from your past, what do you feel like is the experience that's brought you to this place of wanting to run for Senate?
I'm an Air Force veteran. So I fought for this country. And looking at where democracy is going right now, I think we're at a very historic moment. And we're seeing things that are bringing about a true anti-democratic perspective. And that is extremely concerning for me. Anytime I see a sitting president literally attempt to overthrow the government, it just causes me just a little bit of concern there. We have to be very thoughtful about that situation. And it made me realize we got to be accountable. We got to participate in the process of voting. We need to understand it. We need to educate ourselves. And we need to not allow someone to snatch away our votes because they don't like the way the numbers came out.
The district that you're running in, the current incumbent is a Republican, Josh Kimbrell. He won with about 55% of the vote. And he's not being primaried as a Republican, but on the Democrat side, it's you against another candidate. Do you feel like this is good exposure for the Democrats in a district that has typically leaned Republican?
I do. I think anytime anybody has the ability to show different
perspectives, it is
an opportunity for Democrats. Mm-hmm. Although this district is Republican leaning, for 30 years, we had a Democrat in that position. Mm-hmm. So it is not out of the realm of possibility that we can turn this seat back
blue.
Like anything else, it's going to require some work. I actively encourage everybody that wants to participate in the democratic process to do so. And if that means running for office, then absolutely, because each one of us will have our own perspective. So I'm encouraged, but at the same time, it would be great to not have a primary. But I think it also affords individuals an opportunity to see what Democrats have and other people that are out there and what their mission and their vision is.
Are there any distinguishing factors between you and your primary opponent?
The distinguishing factors is I was born and raised here in Spartanburg, and I've spent my entire life here. I've only left to go serve in the military. Secondly, since I've been back, I've spent my time dedicated to public service. I've served on many boards and commissions. I've been appointed to several of the city boards, and now I serve on the county zoning board of appeals. But within the community, I'm a part of the Kiwanis Club and the Cleveland Opportunity Foundation and the credit union. I sit on their board of directors, Carolina Foothills. So I have been actively serving this community for a number of years. I didn't just show up and decide, oh, you know what? I think I want to run. And I think that does make a difference. I appreciate that my opposition would like to run, but I think they need to be familiar with the community. And I think that makes a difference. And also, I think you have to have a clear plan for this district. You can't win this district without crossover vote. And you're going to have a clear, concrete plan in order to convince Republicans to encourage them to cross over.
If we were to talk to your best friend from the U.S. Air Force, what would they tell us about you?
Probably the same thing everybody would tell you about okay. me. I'm persistent. I'm a little bit crazy. I have a tendency to jump off a cliff. I believe what I believe. I'm very rooted in my beliefs. And I am open to hearing what other people have to say. But if you don't have a real argument and you're just trying to convince me with some half-cocked scheme, I'm not buying it.
Okay.
But they'll also tell you, I like to have fun. I like to enjoy myself. I like to travel and explore new things. I think I was more surprised that I was running for office than they were. Because it's just not my nature. I'm an accountant by trade. We're not the public image of anybody. We're in the back room crunching the numbers.
Let's dive into what we call the lightning round. This is where you stand on these hot button issues. So if one is you disagree and 10 is you fully agree with the current or proposed legislation. So I'm going to combine this using terms that not everyone agrees with, but social emotional learning, diversity, equity, inclusion, critical race theory in schools, the bills that essentially limit what teachers can teach.
I disagree. None of those are real issues. They're not being taught in the classroom in any shape, fashion, or form. So there is no need for the bill.
How judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
Disagree. They need to reform that system.
Heartbeat bill, 6-week abortion ban.
Totally disagree. One, a medical decision that is a choice that should be made between a woman and her doctor.
School vouchers for all.
Absolutely disagree. Public dollars should be used for public education.
Constitutional carry.
Ridiculous. Totally disagree. You need to have training and responsibility when it comes to firearms. As a military veteran, I agree that you should have the opportunity to carry guns, but you need to be responsible. And it is irresponsible to put that in the hands of an 18-year-old who is still learning the ropes and how to be a responsible individual.
Last one, medical marijuana.
I've had a lot of people reach out to me. I have not seen a study to date, and I'm still doing the research, that says that it is the absolute need when it comes to treatment. I know that it has some beneficial uses, but I'm not sure that we're at that point because it's a sticky wicket for law enforcement, and I don't know that I can agree or disagree with that. I think it needs a little bit more research.
Today, I'm talking to Sevi Alvarez, running for State Senate District 11. Sevi, welcome to Frogmore Stew.
Hi, thank you for inviting me. It's good to be here.
So your district is really interesting. it was a Dem district until 2020. Is that right?
That's correct. A Democrat held it for 30 years.
Josh Kimbrell is now the incumbent, and he is running on the Republican ticket.
That is correct.
He is not being primaried by any Republican, but you do have another Democrat in the primary.
Her name is Angela Jeter.
So what brought you to the place that you feel like you should run for Senate?
I moved to Spartanburg in 2019 from Charlotte, North Carolina. Once I got here, I started paying attention to the state government in South Carolina, and it seems to me like they weren't doing a very good job of representing their constituents. It seems like they're trying to chase the extreme votes rather than trying to appeal to a wide base. And I think a lot of the policies that they're passing at their best are helping very few people, and at their worst are actively harming residents of South Carolina. So I felt like someone needed to stand up and do something about it. And if that someone has to be me, then so be it.
Do you feel like your job has helped prepare you for the job of the senator?
I've been a CPA for over 8 years, although I don't currently work as an accountant. But my experience as a CPA, I think, gives me some extra insight on what a budget is supposed to look like. Currently, I'm a stay-at-home parent to two wonderful children. My stepdaughter is 14. She's starting high school next year. And my son is actually 3, about to turn 4. So I feel like my experience as a stay-at-home parent has given me the skills to effectively manage a schedule and prioritize things. Also, in my spare time, I've been a community advocate in this area since I moved to Spartanburg. So I feel like I have a pulse on what issues are the most pressing to the people who live here.
Do you feel like in your district, there is one issue that really stands out above any others that people are really concerned about?
Yes, I think the biggest issue that's specific to this district is the incredible amount of growth that it's been experiencing in recent years, and more importantly, how to effectively manage that growth so that it works for the people of Spartanburg County rather than against them. And one example that I like to go to is the insane traffic that's in the Boiling Springs area. Boiling Springs, I feel like, has been growing much faster than the infrastructure can support, which has resulted in awful traffic and a general lower quality of life for the people who live there. So that's just one example of how we can do a better job of effectively managing that growth.
Do you think that there's an issue that's really a hot button from an overall state perspective that needs to be focused on?
Absolutely. And not only for me, but for over half the population in South Carolina. And I think the biggest issue is being able to protect the ability of our residents to make their own medical decisions. I'm a proponent of reproductive freedom and of gender-affirming care for the minors who need it. You know, when I was battling cancer last year, nobody told me that I couldn't have chemotherapy treatments or the surgeries that saved my life. And I think everyone else deserves that same level of freedom.
This probably, based on that answer, is a redundant question, but if there was one policy that you would change immediately that's currently in place, what would it be?
In the interest of not making it redundant, I would create incentives for more early childcare providers to set up shop in South Carolina and do something to ensure that childcare workers make a living wage. I think this would help struggling parents, and it would also free up a lot of parents to enter the workforce. I think this would create incentives for professionals to move to our state and increase the caliber of talent across the board to help out our business community.
So Spartanburg County has a lot to offer. And one of the things that our state has been really good at doing is attracting manufacturing jobs. And one thing that I feel like we're lagging behind on a little bit are the gray and white collar jobs. Is there something that you feel like you could do as a state senator to help attract more of those top-level jobs?
I think that attracting companies of all types and accompanying talent with them is important for our state to continue to be prosperous as it has been in recent years. And I think an effective way to do that is to create a more hospitable environment for prospective families to move here. And I think my policy priorities, which I've already discussed in the previous questions, would go a long way toward that goal.
A lot of the chatter among the CEOs of some of our biggest companies is that when they go to look for people to fill a lot of those top line jobs, there's no one in the state available to fill those, that they almost always have to go out of state. Is that something that you could address as a state senator?
I feel like I could address that again by creating a more attractive environment so that professionals will move here without the companies that are here having to actively like look out of state to find them. And my goal is that South Carolina should be a desirable place for people to actively want to move to on their own.
If we got a hold of one of your best friends from high school or college,
sure.
What is one thing that they would think was funny about you that they could tell us?
I think it would probably be the time that I was at my friend's house and we were just really in the mood for s'mores, but we didn't have a good way to make them until my friend found a blowtorch. And so I said, let's make s'mores with a blowtorch. So we had the ingredients and we used the blowtorch to make them. And we had a good time.
Okay, so creative solutions.
Exactly, yeah, creative solutions.
That's part of your resume. Got it.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. And now we will move on to what I call the lightning round. Okay. And this is where you stand on these hot button issues from 1 to 10. One is that you disagree with current legislation or proposed legislation, and 10 is you fully agree with current or proposed legislation. Okay, here we go. Medical marijuana.
Medical marijuana, that's a 10. I think we need to implement that.
Lawyer legislators on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
There are some perceived conflicts of interest with that whole process, and I think getting lawyer legislators off of that committee would go a long way toward eliminating those.
And how judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
That's a 4. I think we need to see some reforms to increase transparency and, again, reduce those perceived conflicts of interest.
Okay. Sure. Diversity, equity, inclusion / critical race theory being limited in schools, limiting what teachers can teach.
For critical race theory specifically, I would say 5, just because I think the concepts are important. However, for diversity, equity, and inclusion, that's a 10. I feel that diversity is strength, equity is fairness, and inclusion is self-explanatory.
Term limits for state house and state senate.
Like a 2 or a 3 for me. I think it's important that at least some of the people that run our government retain some institutional knowledge to make sure that it functions smoothly.
Constitutional carry.
That one is like a 4. I get why some people want it, but I think it's just too dangerous.
School vouchers for all.
1. Public school money should stay in public schools.
And last one, we all know the answer to this. The heartbeat bill or 6-week abortion ban.
That's a 1. Everyone deserves to make their own healthcare choices.
Today, we are with Gary Votor. He's District 22, which I believe is Northeast Columbia. He is running on the Workers' Party ticket for what is currently Mia McLeod's district. Gary, welcome to Frogmore Stew.
Thanks. I'm also filed to run in House 76. All 3 of the candidates from the Workers' Party filed for both races that we're eligible for. And we're going to pick and choose which one we stay in or drop out after the primary when we see how the Democrats and Republicans vote.
I was not aware that there was a loophole. Tell us about that.
Other candidates have done it. Democrats have done it, too. You could run in both races even, but we're not interested in doing that. Most people don't when they're running as a Democrat or a Republican because there are filing fees, because they nominate by primary. We nominate by convention, so we don't have to pay filing fees. We found one little thing that actually works in our advantage in the system.
Back to your district, though. We're District 22.
Yeah.
What is your life experience been like that's brought you to running for a legislative seat in the state of South Carolina?
Yeah. Over a decade ago, I became a social justice activist. I've worked with the Poor People's Campaign, Black Lives Matter, RIN, Planned Parenthood, all of those organizations. I've been a legal observer for the ACLU and marshaled at events at the State House for pretty much a decade. A couple of years back, I decided that we weren't really making a lot of progress as activists. We can protest and yell at the State House, but the State House really doesn't listen to us as a building or the people inside. So I decided I'd run for governor, and that was about 3 years ago. I ended up being removed from the ballot by the Democratic Party. I started out running as a Democrat, and for 2 years, I went around the state, going to the county conventions, meeting with local groups of Democrats, talking about my candidacy. Mia McLeod entered the race, and that was great. Joe Cunningham entered the race. That was great. And then we realized that Mia and I were both supporting the party platform completely. And one of the things that was in the Democratic Party platform was a $15 an hour minimum wage. Mr. Cunningham did not support a $15 minimum wage. He was on record as saying never more than 12. And the reason he was doing that was to cater to the hospitality and tourism industry in the Charleston area as donors. So I brought it up with the Democratic Party chair at the time, Trav Robertson, and what his response was, we're not going to do anything about that. If we tell him he can't be on the ballot, he'll sue the party, and we don't feel like dealing with that. And I thought that was an inappropriate answer in a democracy. So I left the Democratic Party, and I signed up to go on the ballot with the Labor Party, which nobody knew even existed. They still had ballot access. The Democratic Party found somebody within the Labor Party that didn't want to run candidates against Democrats, let them know that there was a discrepancy with the dates of the convention from the Labor Party. So the South Carolina Democratic Party, using Dick Harpootlian's law firm, took us to court, and they got a judge to grant an injunction that removed us from the ballot days before the deadline with the Election Commission. They also sued the Election Commission, too. It's typical of two-party politics. You know, they try to keep everybody out that's not one of them. All right. But honestly, that was a tactic I would have expected from Republicans, not Democrats. But they did what they did.
What, in your opinion, is the biggest issue that's facing District 22?
Poverty and wages. Absolutely. We've got, I think, literally at least 100 fast food restaurants, for example, in my district that have drive-thrus and minimum wage employees. And they deserve to make a living wage. People shouldn't have to work three jobs just to have an apartment. And in a state like ours, where we haven't expanded Medicaid to cover the working poor, it's even harder for them because they get crippled by medical debts, et cetera, because of their incomes.
If we don't do something to address poverty, we can't fix most of the problems our society has in general.
I'd be pushing for an actual minimum wage. I would be pro-union every opportunity I got. Being a right-to-work state is part of why our poverty level is so high and our wages are so low.
Are there any job creation type things that are happening in the district?
Most of the newer big job creations go out to rural areas, not so much in the urban or suburban areas. Yep. Walmart's a big employer, as always. Blue Cross Blue Shield is a big employer. Again, a $20 minimum wage is what I'm standing for.
The party was only going with 15, but it's been 5 years.
And how about housing?
Housing in my district, especially in the city, in Columbia, it's moving to more expensive housing. It's not as affordable for people at a lower income that actually live in the district. We're seeing these mega developments where, you know, big, huge townhouses go in that cost $150,000 a piece. Most people can't afford that. We need more affordable housing that people can actually afford to live in and raise a family. And at the same time, feel invested. So we get them out of the rent cycle. Yeah, I'm a big fan of getting rid of property taxes for a lot of people, especially the lower income people. They shouldn't have to pay property taxes. You know, and that's one of the biggest burdens to keep them from owning a home.
What do you feel like statewide needs to be addressed immediately if you go to the Senate?
I've always been a big, strong advocate of Medicaid expansion, which is one thing this state is so far behind most of the country on. I spent most of my life in New England. I was born in the South, but my dad was in the Navy, so we moved back up to New England. I lived there most of my life. About 15 years ago, my first wife died after a really long extended illness, 3 years of home care. Everything was funded and paid for by our Medicare and Medicaid systems in Massachusetts because it's a very liberal state. After she passed, I tried to repurpose my life. One of the things I wanted to do was be a voice for people that were in the same position that we are, that didn't know enough to get a second opinion or didn't understand what informed consent was. So I went back to school. I got a master's degree in healthcare administration so I could be a healthcare advocate for people for free. I decided at that point that it was time to leave New England and realized, you know, I needed to go where the greatest need existed in terms of healthcare issues. And I landed in South Carolina.
Right now, I'm sure you are very aware the House is 88-36. The Senate is 30-16. Yep. Being a minority voice in not just a minority way, but like a super minority, how do you see getting anything done when you get there? Is there anything that you feel can cross over?
I want them to refocus on things that they've just put aside for the last 10 years.
Medicaid expansion is a perfect example.
I think most Republicans would vote with Democrats for some form of Medicaid expansion if they understood the issue better than they do now. If they understood that the federal government pays for most of that expansion, it actually creates jobs Plus, it brings healthcare to people that will vote for them in their districts as well. Somebody needs to explain to them that half of the people that would be eligible are white. 60% of the people that would be eligible have somebody who works full-time in their family. They're not unemployed people who don't look like them. They're actually them.
That's something we talk about on this podcast all the time.
Yeah. Is
how do you break the barrier of talking to constituents on the other side that get fed a stream of the exact opposite of what you're saying?
Well, there's two opposites to what we're saying. Being a third party, I know, it's funny, isn't it? As a party, we are much further left than the Democratic Party. We're a socialist party. We're also running two socialist candidates for president and vice president on our ticket this year that have a nationwide campaign. They're going to be on the ballot in 20 states. It's the first time in 80 years that a socialist has been on the ballot running for president in South Carolina. We're proud to be able to do that and give people the opportunity to vote differently than left or right. I really think there's a lot of people that don't fit in either category, and they tune out all the stuff they hear from the left and the right because they don't feel like either party is working for them. So it's our job as the working party is to reach those people and let them see that, hey, there's another choice.
The term socialism in the U.S. has a very negative connotation with a lot of people. And I think people have become very scared of that word. So how do you, as the Workers' Party, using the term socialist freely, how do you feel people will accept what you're saying when there are a lot of people that are like, oh my God, no, I have to run away from this?
Yeah, I know. I know what you're saying. We talk about income, equalizing incomes. I've read plenty of statistics that if the upper 5% paid their full share of taxes, we would need to expand Medicaid because we'd have all the money we could spend to help the poor. We need to make them understand these things, that it isn't about left and right. It's about top and bottom. Yeah. And I'm a firm believer in something that Desmond Tutu said was, in order to be able to stop pulling people out of the water from drowning, you have to go upstream and figure out why they're falling in. And that's what socialism does.
It just gets turned around in such a way when the term socialism is applied.
I know. They like things that fit in their categories, left versus right. And I tell people all the time, don't be fooled by them. They bill it as a battle between the left and a battle between the right, but it isn't really. The two of them are symbiotic. They're like the Tom and Jerry of politics, is the way I explain it to people. The cartoon animals that are always fighting with each other when the humans are around. But when the humans aren't around, they're best of buddies. In fact, neither one of them can exist without the other. It's the Democrats and the Republicans. We want to differentiate ourselves from that two-party struggle because we need people to understand that it isn't about that. It really isn't. It's about a lower class of people and an upper class of people. And the upper class of people are advantaged. They have privilege. It lets them get further ahead in society than the people on the bottom half. And the only way they can do that is at the expense of the lower half. My position is, why not just level the playing field and put everybody in the middle, as long as we can ensure that nobody's in jeopardy of being homeless, or their children aren't getting fed well, or they're not getting the medical treatment they need for a terminal illness or preventive care. Why can't we do that? We're the richest country in the world. And we also have the richest people in the world. So maybe it's time we rethink that. And that is the essence of socialism. We're called the Workers' Party for a reason.
Okay, let's get to the lightning round. These are all hot button issues, and it's from 1 to 10. If 1 is that you totally disagree and 10 is that you agree with the current legislation in place or proposed legislation that is currently in the House or the Senate. The first one is the heartbeat bill or the 6-week abortion ban.
It's definitely a 1.
And then school vouchers for all.
That's another 1.
Open carry, the legislation that was just passed.
That's a negative 100.
Transgender care banned for minors.
1.
Critical race theory, diverse equity inclusion, the bill that was passed limiting what teachers can teach.
1.
Term limits for state house and state senate.
10.
How judges are currently chosen through the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
That needs complete reform, so that's a 1.
Lawyer legislators on the Judicial Merit Selection Committee.
That's a 1.
You have completed the lightning round, Gary Vautour.
Yay. Thank you. I appreciate it. Love the opportunity to reach people.
I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep. I'm all set and it started with the meal prep.
Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is a podcast series presented to help you be a more informed voter for South Carolina. We encourage you to verify your voter information and see a sample ballot for your district online at scvotes.gov. Frogmore Stew Meal Prep is hosted by Grace Cowan and Caitlin Brewer, with editing and IT support by Eric Johnson, produced by TJ Phillips for the Podcast Solutions Network.